And we continue at 107 on this Throwback Thursday, Talk Radio 790 KABC. Broadcasting live from the Coachella Valley, and it's time to fully reopen the state of California for business. Mr. Randy Wang is at the sports desk in Culver City.
John, at the risk of editorializing, the LA Times has a story that hundreds of giant sequoia trees have burned to death in recent wildfires. If that's the case, doesn't that mean PG&E is a serial killer?
You know, there should just be an entire section in the LA Times that's just an obit page for plants, animals, and people as a direct result of PG&E.
We care so much about the environment here, but because of our utility-caused wildfires, LA still has the worst air quality in the nation.
Oh, it's true. Although, if you work in radio, you really don't need another excuse not to exercise.
And we already blow out enough hot air here.
Every time I open up the front door and I look out, I feel like the air quality is like the food options at Kentucky Fried Chicken. You have two choices, chunky and extra chunky. That's it. I guess in their case, it's crispy and extra crispy.
You know, it got bad when luckily, Southern California hasn't had a lot of wildfires the last couple months, but the ash from the Northern California ones came down here and still rained on my car.
That's exactly right. I got my car washed not that long ago, and I came out the next day, and I looked at that car, and you would think that that would be the beater that Dick Van Dyke was taking to work on the set of Mary Poppins. It was nothing but ash and soot. Everywhere you turned. It looked like I hadn't washed the thing in months. 800-222-KABC is the number. 1-800-222-5222. It is a pleasure to welcome our next guest to the program. You read her in the pages of Politico, where she is the senior writer for the California Playbook, Carla Marinucci. Carla, welcome.
Good to be with you, John. Speaking to you from the home of the soon-to-be champion San Francisco Giants.
Oh, yes. Well, I'll tell you this. Being in Northern California, I'm sure the soot that you find on your cars is much more than the soot that we find on ours.
Yeah, we have those problems. It's true. I did think it was interesting that, by the way, speaking of the Giants and Dodgers, that Kamala Harris and Doug Emhoff are splitting up over their support of the team.
Oh, is that so? Trouble in River City?
The Giants. The second gentleman is with the Dodgers.
Oh, my.
We'll see how goes.
They were just out here in the Coachella Valley.
They were. In fact, it was kind of a mystery trip. She said it was for family issues. But she did take a short trip out there to Palm Springs. You're absolutely right.
I know the answer.
Yes.
His parents live out here.
That's right. In law issues, yeah.
Yeah, and they live in the most Republican part of the Coachella Valley, too, in Sun City.
I guess that explains why she came in and out with no fanfare and a lot of secrecy around that trip.
Oh, yeah. No, she doesn't want to eat at the bar at the restaurants in Sun City. She wants to eat in a booth in the back. Let's talk about the vaccine mandates in California. These are now required for students in California schools, both public and private schools, when the vaccines are FDA approved. This is something that Newsom has said repeatedly that he thinks are good politics and good public policy. But what I can't wrap my head around, and I know you've talked to him about this.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about children, you're essentially talking about a population of people that's as close to zero risk in terms of COVID-19 as it gets. You can compare them to any other age category. They are by far in the strongest position. Yet you look at adults who have the most problems with COVID-19, particularly those over the age of 65, those with comorbidities. At this point, we know who COVID is really going after aggressively. The teachers are not required to take the shot, and the prison guards aren't required to take the shot. Two populations of people that are much more at risk from COVID-19 than students, yet they got a pass and the students didn't. How did that happen?
Well, actually, the governor, I was with him when he made that announcement this week, basically mandating vaccines, California first in the nation to mandate vaccines for K-12. And the governor did say that teachers and school staff are going to be held to the same standard, the same timeline under that new requirement, that they can right now provide a proof of vaccination or they can submit the weekly test, but they're going to have to meet those same requirements as the kids. There are going to be exceptions for personal beliefs, and that may be a big exception here. But the bottom line is, Newsom has been doing kind of a victory lap around the state on the issue of COVID because California has some good news to report on that California is the only state with moderate COVID-19 transmission. The rate has continued to fall here. When it comes to Delta, there are half as many COVID hospitalizations right now as there were in the summer on a per capita basis. So yeah, I know, children are less at risk, but that means there's not a complete absence of risk, John. I mean, I do know somebody whose 11-year-old daughter up here in Sacramento has had COVID for more than a year and suffers from continual headaches. USA Today just did a big story on the girl. She's been very brave, but I mean, the fact is, if it hits kids, it can hit them very hard. And I think Newsom is saying, look, when he did this event this week, he said, look, we're all exhausted from this pandemic. We all want to get over it. And the best way to get over it is to get people vaccinated and not to keep kids at risk. So that's where he's coming from on it. And when you look at the numbers seem to back him up at this point. Now, there is news on COVID today, some good news, and that is that at least up in the Bay Area, at least nine jurisdictions now are finally issuing conditions under which the indoor mask wearing is going to be lifted. And London Breed, the mayor of San Francisco, today announced that on October 15th, that's just next week, San Francisco is going to begin easing those mask requirements in indoor settings. And that's because of high vaccination rates, low positivity rates, good news, good trend lines going on.
You forgot the three things that also led to that. Tony.
Well, yeah, that was for those who don't remember, Mayor Breed was without a mask watching Tony in an indoor club recently. Apologize for it, but yes, there are those moments. But what she's saying is, and it's true, this is going to be an important step for the city in terms of economics and in terms of just the outlook on this whole thing. As you know, I mean, this comes a day after Mayor Garcetti signed vaccine mandates for indoor spaces in L.A. So we've got various things going on, but the bottom line is the biggest picture for California is that it's looking pretty good. California has a lower rate than any other state at this point. So Newsom does get some bragging rights on that one.
Let's look down the road a little bit, because one of the things that's going to happen, one of the things that's already happened, is you see big school districts in California like LAUSD, like San Francisco Unified, that have seen a declining enrollment, and not just in small numbers, large numbers. I would imagine that a lot of parents are going to look at these mandates and they're going to say, you know what, I'm going to take my kid out of the public school, I'm going to homeschool him, I'm going to move out of state, I'm going to do something so I don't have to comply with this law that I don't believe in, and the enrollment numbers will continue to fall. The way the budgeting works for these school districts is they get paid based on the number of pupils that they are responsible for educating, specifically pupils that actually show up to school for on-campus instruction. If these numbers continue to decline, there are going to be a lot of districts with a lot of holes in their budgets. What's going to happen then?
Well, yeah, that's a good point. As you said, student attendance means budget for the school districts. But whether these parents are going to make good on those promises, I think that is the question. We've heard private businesses, including Kaiser Health, some of the airlines, United Airlines, said that they've had actually very little after the initial reports that thousands of employees were going to leave based on these mandates. Actually, it's been only a handful who have actually done so. Whether parents want to take on the job of homeschooling, and I know from family members who have done it, that is not an easy task by any stretch, and whether it delivers a quality education to your kids in many cases is also a question. So there, whether parents are going to actually make good on those promises, we'll have to see if that happens. I think in cases of private industry, we found not as many people as we thought wanted to give up jobs, give up benefits, and maybe give up public education benefits because of the vaccine mandates. I think that this has yet to be sort of played out.
Dianne Feinstein is California's senior U.S. senator. She is in her 80s, and she, of course, was a topic of discussion in the recall election. If she were to resign, retire, or pass away in office, the governor would be responsible for naming her replacement, and that could theoretically tip the balance of power in Washington, D.C. She has been missing a lot of votes in Washington, D.C., including on important subjects. Do we have any idea what's going on with her and why she's missing all of these votes?
Well, she was missing about a week of votes because her husband, Richard Blum, was in the ICU. He's had cancer in the past, and he was seriously ill for several days. She came up here to San Francisco. There are some, I have heard some suggest that maybe she's the subject of a little bit of ageism on this one, because many members of Congress leave for family, for kid leave, for family leave, to take care of spouses, etc., and are not subject to the kind of, brutal criticism she was for doing the same thing. People were calling her a fossil on Twitter, and you know how tough Twitter can be. The question is, was she gone because of her own incapacity? No, it was because she was tending to a husband who was sick. Now he's better, and she's back at work and putting out press releases. The people I know who, look, I've covered Feinstein a long time up here in San Francisco, those who know her well say there is no way. She is not going to quit before the next term is up, and maybe run for re-election. She's going to go in, stay with the boots on. And I think that is kind of an interesting dynamic, given that a lot of the progressives here in the state, she had a challenge last time from Kevin DeLeon, and she may get a challenge again if she decides to run for re-election. At that point, she'll be, I think, 93. So we'll watch that. But I think there was maybe a legitimate issue about ageism on the criticism this time around, because she wasn't the one who was sick. She was, caring for a family member.
Well, and Chuck Grassley's in his 80s. He recently announced that he's running for re-election, which would put him in his 90s, and he's crushing it in the polls in Iowa.
and he doesn't get the same kind of attention, I got to say. She is the oldest member of the Senate, let's be honest. And there have been several stories that suggest, she has lost some off the fastball. But the fact is, she's still putting out the press releases on a day-to-day basis. I see those, and proposing bills and putting out legislation. So at this point, we're going to have to see how that goes. But most people who really know her say don't expect retirement anytime soon.
I'll give you a true story about Chuck Grassley. A friend of mine is a reporter, was a reporter at that time for Bloomberg covering Congress. And he had to get a comment from Chuck Grassley about something. And the first question was, hey, how you doing? How you feeling? And I guess Grassley interpreted that as a question about his age, and he kind of took it a little bit as a slight. So to answer his question on how he was doing, how he was feeling, he dropped to the ground and did 20 push-ups.
I'm going to try that on Dianne Feinstein next time I see her.
Let's shift gears and talk about another San Francisco politician, Nancy Pelosi. She's trying to get the reconciliation bill through. She's trying to get the infrastructure bill through. She doesn't have a large majority in Congress. She just has a couple of vote majority, so she doesn't have many votes to spare. the progressives have gone to war with the moderates over how much money they're willing to spend and whether or not the bill should be voted on at the same time or split up. And many of the moderates believe that both she and President Biden sided with the liberals on their strategy and how they decided to move forward with it, and they felt alienated by her. Some of them, including one congressman from New Jersey, came out and blasted her publicly in a statement by name. Where do you think she stands right now with the moderates in her own caucus?
Well, you know, if you know anything about Nancy Pelosi, the one thing she's just a master at wrangling the cats there in her house. And she's a master at counting votes. And this is where, this has always been her strength. Where she stands, I mean, she's going to be working it 24/7. I don't know if you saw the video of her at the congressional baseball game recently. She had a seat right behind the dugout, and she was on the phone negotiating with these people. She does not let up. When we see her in San Francisco, she's doing five events, you know, in five-inch heels. The woman is relentless. And so I wouldn't count out anything about Pelosi in terms of her ability to put it together, to piece it together. And they are, you know, battling there right now. But Pelosi's the one who got the Affordable Care Act over the line with just unbelievable strategic moves that she made. And I wouldn't count her out on this one either.
I read John Boehner's book, and one of the things that he said in there about his relationship with Nancy Pelosi and working with Nancy Pelosi is that he wishes he could have been as cold-blooded with his caucus as she was with hers. If she felt like someone did her dirty, she never forgot it.
Oh, yeah.
For a member of Congress like this congressman from New Jersey who came out and blasted her publicly, knowing Nancy Pelosi as you do, having covered her for years, do you believe that she understands that he's playing to his constituency, that he's playing to his people back in New Jersey? Or is she going to remember that forever?
Oh, no, I think she, you know, look, at in the past, remember, she's faced challenges before when she was trying to win back the speakership. She faced challenges in the House. She let those go. She understands when members have to make statements that they do. Look at her relationship with AOC, which started out on such a contentious level. These two have come together. They've worked it out. They understand where the turf lines are, and Pelosi certainly understands what her members have to do. But I mean, at the same time, you don't want to cross her because she can be relentless, and that's part of her power. That's part of the power that she has had as speaker, and why many people think she's probably been the most effective speaker in modern times. In that respect, she's got a steel spine. She has said that before. That's what she needs to be in that role, and everything suggests that you're going to see that steel spine in the next couple of days as this thing goes to the close.
The one that surprises me is that she made up with Linda Sanchez, the congresswoman from Whittier. There was a moment in time when Linda Sanchez ran for some leadership post that she didn't.
That's right.
She wasn't supposed to run for. And when she was asked why she was doing it against Pelosi's wishes, she said, "Look, I'm here now. I don't plan on being here when I'm 80.
And, you know, there's a lot of talk up here in San Francisco about what happens after this cycle, if the Republicans take back the House, what happens? Those who know her up here say she will probably end it at that point. She won't try to recover, go back and try to reclaim the speakership for a third time. So it could be very, very interesting if that happens, if the Republicans take the House. That's going to set off a battle royale up here in San Francisco for that seat, which
is her daughter going to run?
Long seat, right? We'll see. She obviously doesn't intend to let that happen, and says it's not going to happen. But boy, the numbers aren't looking good for her at this point.
Is her daughter going to run if she retires?
Oh yeah, Christine Pelosi is extremely well connected, well known within the party, a big activist. But she won't be the only one aiming for that seat. Senator Scott Wiener will be another one probably. That'll be a really interesting and very contentious contest up here in San Francisco. Should Pelosi let that seat go vacant and that be an open seat, that'll be wild.
Carla Marinucci, you can read her in the pages of Politico, where she writes the California Playbook, and follow her on Twitter at @CMarinucci. Carla, thanks so much for stopping by.
Always good to be with you, Don. Thanks.
Likewise. You know, Randy, I remember growing up here in Southern California, particularly in the late 80s and early 90s when crime was a problem. One of the things that was very popular, a lot of my friends' parents used to have the club. Do you remember the club?
I remember people to this day still have the club. And it's not to protect a very nice car. Guy I used to work with did it on his Volvo.
I have never seen a club used on a car that's worth more than $400.
Sometimes the club is worth more than the car it's protecting. Especially, they don't make them anymore. You probably get a mint for those on eBay.
No kidding. And even though they would use the club, frequently the cars would still get stolen, despite the fact that the club was used. That's what you call adding insult to injury. You lose out on the $400 cost of the car and whatever it is that the club cost. So you're out, what, $460?
Plus two easy payments of $39.99.
I loved on the ads. They always showed someone rolling up in some foreign import. Brand new. The new car smell was coming through the television. They don't show you the 35-year-old truck that's dedicated to a relative who was shot and killed in a gang hit. But anyway, I digress. Randy, in Southern California, auto thefts are up again.
And if you watch the local news, you'll know that because there seems to be a high-speed chase every single day in Southern California, whether it's Channel 5, Channel 9, Channel 11. Pretty much all the local programming is a little local news and a lot of car chases.
Let's have more from NBC4.
Woman was hit and killed in a hit-and-run crash in North Hills this morning, and police say the person responsible was driving a stolen car. NBC4's I-team investigated and found out the latest crime data shows a big increase in car thefts this year, and detectives say some of those are easily preventable. Here's our investigative reporter, Eric Leonard.
It was just a bad scene this morning.
The crash here at Nordoff and Havenhurst around 5:30 this morning happened when this black Range Rover sped through a red light and smashed into a Honda that had the green light. Several other cars were hit.
Right in front of us, like 3D, like a movie. It felt like a movie. Be lucky we stopped fast enough to where we weren't involved in the accident.
The driver of the Honda was killed. The LAPD tells us it was a woman in her 60s. The passenger in the car was seriously hurt. LA City employee Brian Macklin says he saw the Range Rover driver run from the scene.
Guy blew a red light, smashed into a few cars, and took off running through the alley.
The SUV was reported stolen from Glendale 2 days ago, and LAPD Chief Michael Moore says it's yet another example of the big increase in stolen cars, a 48% increase over this time in 2019 and an 8% spike over this time in 2020, which means in raw numbers, some 1,200 more cars have been taken this year compared with last.
That's like four high-speed chases a day.
A 48% increase in auto theft. Here's what I don't understand, though, Randy. It's hard to get in the mind of a criminal because the thought of stealing someone's car would never occur to me. However, if for whatever reason I decided I was going to steal someone's car, I would mind my P's and Q's when I'm driving said stolen car around town.
I wouldn't be blowing any red lights.
Every time you hear about one of these stolen cars, they're running into other cars like they're bowling pins. Wouldn't you try to draw less attention to yourself as opposed to more?
Well, this is probably why they had to steal the car, because they smashed up their actual car.
If they just learned how to drive, they wouldn't have to keep stealing other people's cars.
Some 1,200 more cars have been taken this year compared with last.
The vast majority of vehicles that are stolen are being recovered. Sometimes they're recovered in the very neighborhoods in which they're stolen. Other times they're recovered in adjoining areas and outside the city.
Chief Moore told the police commission this morning that suggests many are being stolen just to be used as transportation.
What, like as a commuter vehicle?
God. I got to go to the grocery store. Should I ride the bus? Nah, I don't want to be exposed to all that COVID. Should I call an Uber? No, those take forever. How about this? Why don't I steal a car and just leave it at Ralph's?
I'm going to carjack someone to go get some groceries.
Others are being chopped up for valuable repair parts or shipped overseas. He says some are being taken for use in drug trafficking, either to move illegal drugs or as collateral in deals.
There you go. I can only buy this pound of meth if I've got this stolen car as collateral in case it's bad.
The dominoes just keep falling, don't they?
One factor may be a symptom of the COVID-19 pandemic. Courts have been releasing most nonviolent arrestees, like those accused of car theft, without bail.
You don't say.
And how about this? If you steal a car and you're driving around the city streets like a maniac, how is that not violent? You put half the city at risk.
Yeah, I've seen some of the way these chases end. That Grand Theft Auto is a violent crime. If you hit somebody, that's assault with a deadly weapon. That's what they call it when you drink and drive. Yet somehow George Gascon says these guys don't even need to be held on bail, and they're free to steal another car the next day. We had a story, what, 6 months ago of a guy who stole a car in Glendale, got arrested, got out the next day, stole another car right outside the police station.
I'm surprised he didn't steal a Crown Vic.
Courts have been releasing most nonviolent arrestees, like those accused of car theft, without bail. And Moore says he's asked for research on whether or not that has emboldened repeat offenders.
I don't know if you need the research if the car thefts are up 50%.
See, this is why the taxes keep going up. If you need to launch a research study to figure this out, you're hopeless.
I think most people, even people that are not, you know, dedicated in the field of law enforcement, can connect the dots of you're not keeping the car thieves in jail, so they're stealing more cars. There, we did the research. I'll take that $5 million grant.
And Moore says he's asked for research on whether or not that has emboldened repeat offenders.
Whether or not this bail and court operations, which are deferring arraignments and trials, months in advance, or months towards the future, is somehow facilitating or allowing this increase of these auto thefts.
Now, the chief says he's asked detectives to ask courts to set bail when someone released once is then arrested again for auto theft.
Maybe you can get a punch card like at Subway.
Every 10th car you steal, what do you get?
That one's free.
Well, they're all free. There needs to be a sweetener. You get a van?
They'll upgrade you.
Overall, stolen car arrests are up about 30% over the last 2 years. That's about 700 additional stolen car bookings since January of this year. Clearly, those numbers are showing the arrests are not having the desired effect, which is why the chief is saying to look elsewhere. He also says that a lot of these auto thefts are preventable. Sometimes people are leaving keys in their cars because they're sharing parking spaces, and the chief says that's an easy one to fix. Reporting live, I'm investigative reporter Eric Leonard, NBC 4 News.
So, obviously, car thieves are to blame for all of this, but we also need to throw a little blame at developers that built these parking garages with tandem parking spaces.
You know, it's so funny. If under any other circumstances you tell someone that their behavior put them at risk for something bad to happen to them, they will come down on you like a ton of bricks for victim shaming. Someone goes into Harvey Weinstein's hotel room at 2 o'clock in the morning and you say, maybe that's not a good idea. Stop the victim shaming. You can't do that.
You didn't see what that potted plant was wearing.
Yet, these poor saps are having their automobile stolen right and left. And what's the last thing they do? What's the button to the story? They blame the victim.
He also says that a lot of these auto thefts are preventable. Sometimes people are leaving keys in their cars because they're sharing parking spaces, and the chief says that's an easy one to fix.
Well, had you not left those commemorative Elvis mugs visible to the public, your car wouldn't have been stolen. It's your fault.
That's the attitude I got when my car was broken into 10 years ago. Oh, it's not that, you know, crime is rampant in the San Fernando Valley. No, it's that I left my iPod in the car, so it's my fault.
Of course. Of course. Well, it's not just the cars that are getting stolen. So are the catalytic converters. And there's a whole lot of victim blaming going on there, too. But right now, we just spent some time talking about the increase in auto thefts here in Southern California. But Randy, that's not all that's being stolen.
Well, they're not just stealing the cars. In fact, the easiest crime in Southern California right now is going under the car and stealing the catalytic converter, a little device that's supposed to remove smog in clean California that apparently sells on the black market for $1,000. In fact, we also had a story last week that catalytic converter thieves have figured out that you can crack the thing open and the ceramics on the inside can actually be melted down and grounded and snorted.
And it's one of these things where if your catalytic converter is stolen, you know it right away because you start your car and it sounds like a bomb went off.
And then you take your car to the repair shop and it's going to cost you and your insurance $1,000 to replace it. And if you don't replace it, you won't pass smog and you won't get a registration.
You know what it sounds like if you start your car after your catalytic converter has been stolen?
What?
It sounds like what happens when I hit a Titleist at 6:30 in the morning at my favorite golf course at the trailer park community. And I hit a aluminum siding about 120 miles per hour. That's what it sounds like. But of course, we have a George Soros installed district attorney, so we can't blame the thieves. Oh no, we have to blame the car owners and the manufacturers.
And that's what George Gascon is now doing, calling on auto manufacturers to find ways to make these catalytic converters harder to steal. Because we can't go after the thieves.
For more, here's NBC4.
Channel 2.
No.
Close enough.
Four minus two.
Los Angeles County District Attorney George Gascon is asking car manufacturers to help combat catalytic converter thefts. They are made from highly valuable metals like platinum, rhodium, and palladium, meaning each one can bring $1,000. California is one of the top five states in the country for catalytic converter thefts. So far, Gascon's office says he's only heard back from Torrance-based Honda and exploring interest in solving the problem. The Los Angeles County...
Is there interest? Hey, why don't you arrest people?
If I were a car manufacturer and I had this fool coming into my office telling me I need to build cages around catalytic converters because he can't keep the heathens in his county from stealing them,
I know
it would take me about 5 seconds to kick him out of my office.
I know they like to call themselves the SoCal friendly Honda people, but you don't need to be friendly to this guy.
No. In fact, I'd say, you know what? Let's talk about this. I'd say, sit down right there. I'd walk out of the office. I'd take my secretary's phone. I'd get on the phone with someone out in the yard. And I'd say, hey, the district attorney's here. He's parked right up front, steal his catalytic converter.
Maybe if it happened to him, he'd have more sympathy for the victims here instead of making sure that, we don't do anything to these poor people that just need $1,000 real quick.
The Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department is already working with auto shops to etch each catalytic converter with a unique identifying number at no cost to drivers. Katie Johnston for CBSN Los Angeles.
So there you go. Just another day in the life of George Gascon's L.A. County.
Oh, and I have to make a correction. Apparently, that didn't even make it to Channel 2. That was just on their website. My bad.
Well, you have something to watch on your phone while your catalytic converter's being replaced after it's stolen.
First-rate stories go to Channel 2. Second-rate stories, they kick off to Channel 9. Third-rate stories go to CBSN.
What do they do with the fourth-rate? Hated stories.
KNX.
We got one more hour coming up on the John Phillips Show. Talk Radio 790 KABC.